Welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. I'm your host, Jean Armand. Join me weekly as I share health information that will educate and inspire you. Please consider supporting this podcast by listening, subscribing, sharing, and rating. Once again, welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. See, I'm already excited with my guest this evening. I have Dr. Javonda Hodge, and she is my guest today. She's a trauma surgeon and she specializes in burn. Hey, Dr. Hodge, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Miss Armand.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. I've been waiting. We've been trying to get this together. So tell us about yourself, you know, where you were educated. Just share a little bit.
I was born in New York City. My parents went there after they finished college at Tuskegee. They got married and moved to New York City, the Bronx, and then I was born a few years later. I grew up most of my life in New Jersey, finished high school there. After high school, I said, well, I want to do something different, and came to college in Atlanta at Spelman College.
Wow.
After that, I said, well, I told my dad, since he was a teacher, if I don't get into med school, I'm going to be a teacher or, you know, go on work in business. So my minor in college was natural sciences, and my major was natural sciences, and my minor was in business management. I ended up getting into med school and came back home to New Jersey, went to New Jersey Medical School, which is in Newark. I'm now part of Rutgers. And after that, I did my residency at Howard University Hospital, and was there in DC for 6 years. I left, I wanted to make a change. 9/11 happened, and living in DC was a little bit stressful. I was like, I don't know if I can do this, you know, another 10 years in private practice, kind of running around and so on and so forth. And saw an ad for a job at the University of South Alabama, which is in Mobile. I interviewed there for surgical residency. Actually drove down there. That was my last stop for my way back up to New Jersey. And saw an ad in like a surgery magazine. I said, what the hell? Let me just try it. So I called them, said I'm interested in the job, emailed my resume, whatever. And they're like, sure, you're going to come on down. And I was like, yeah. So maxed out my credit card, got a plane ticket, went down there, met with the chair, and he was like, you were serious? I was like, yeah. And that weekend, I like looked for an apartment, and because I knew when you come back for your official visit, you know, you don't have a lot of time to do all that kind of stuff. Looked around the town, found an apartment I thought I would like to live in. Mm-hmm. Then my official visit might be like a month later, and then I was there for probably about 13 years. Before I moved to Atlanta to work at Emory in the Burn Center. So kind of been like back and forth all over the place, but up and down the East Coast.
Right.
I'm the oldest of 6 children. Mm-hmm. I also have a brother who's a physician. He went to Robert Wood Johnson in New Brunswick and then went to Morehouse undergrad. What else?
Well, I never knew we really had that much in common. So I lived in New Jersey. So where in New Jersey? When I did my training for MP school, I was at UMDMJ.
Yes. That's the original school, but now it's like Rutgers and Jersey Medical School.
Yeah, it was UMDMJ. I went to Rutgers. And so, you know, UMDMJ is where I did all my training in the ER. Oh, my God. I never knew you were from. How come you didn't know this? We're in New Jersey. I know Robert Wood Johnson. That's a hospital I've worked for in New Jersey. Oh my goodness. St.
Yeah, so I grew up in like Monmouth County area, like Manalapan, which is like
South Jersey.
Towards the shore. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I grew up in Ewing Township. It was South Jersey, but you were still like further south.
Oh no, we're Central Jersey. So Central.
So I was South Jersey.
Oh, you're South Jersey. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness, Monmouth County.
Yes. Uh huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So small world. So now here you are. I'm trying to figure out when did you decide that you wanted to specialize in burns? Because you're a general surgeon.
I hated burns as a resident.
I hated burns in school too. Mm-hmm. The smell. You know where I did burns at St. Barnabas Hospital, New Jersey. Yes. And that was a terrible thing.
Yeah, it was, it was just back in the day, it was terrible, but I did my burn rotation as a resident at Children's National in Washington, D.C., so it was just hard, seeing those little burn kids, and they would go in the tub every day, and it was But the chair that hired me in Mobile was a burn surgeon, a trauma burn surgeon, and he stepped down, I was his last hire, so we got a new chair. Maybe about 3 years into my tenure. So they make their own changes, blah, blah, blah. And my first boss is his partner in burns, decided to retire. And my new boss was like, well, Arnie's a partner, he likes you, well, you want to work with him. And I'm like, are you kidding me, burns? Like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I want to do my own stuff. So I was like, I don't know. Cause our Lubin was very intensive, and they rounded together every day. Like every day they did rounds together, every day. Saturday, Sunday, holidays. I'm like, I don't want this man on my back like every day. Like I want to do my own stuff,
Right.
I still want my general surgery practice, blah, blah, blah. So I agreed to do it. I was like, okay, I'll work with him, but I still want to do my other stuff. And ended up liking it. And I was like, listen, I don't need you to be, I'm grown. You stay home. When I'm off, I'm off. When you're off, you're off. Don't bother me, So I just kind of started doing it and kind of evolved from there. And he was like, well, you're good at it. You should just kind of keep doing it. I became the assistant director of burns there after I kind of learned on the job. So I kind of was voluntold to do it.
Voluntold. Okay. Voluntold. Okay. That's a good one.
But at a small like academic center, you're able to do a lot, unlike Emory. So I was able to do general surgery. I was still doing trauma. I did my burn stuff.
They had a little taste of everything.
Yeah. So you're able to do a lot just because the faculty is smaller and is don't have a lot of such specialties. So that made it nice. Mm-hmm. As a young person coming out, I still could kind of do a lot of things before I found what I really, really wanted to do, full time. So that's kind of how I got into it. But I never thought I would be doing burns if you asked me as a resident. I was like, hell no. But I think that's part of the specialty's fault because it's not well advertised. And people, people really don't know what you do. So they're kind of like, I don't want to do burns. It's kind of, that's gross.
Yeah.
So, but it is, it is a great, it is a good career. It's very satisfying. And we do general surgery, we do critical care, we do, adult pediatric stuff. Yeah. So all the things I did, was doing prepared me to step into that role pretty much seamlessly. But you just don't know what God has in store for you while you're going through all this stuff, going through all these things. So that's a long about way how I got into it, but
yeah.
Not where I thought I would end up doing now. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And now look at you, big time. Big time.
never know where you're going to end up.
Yeah, I must tell you that, I do get to see your patients and, they like you a lot. Your personality, you make them feel comfortable. This is, because when you're in a room with people and then they share their experience with, once I say, so who's your surgeon, who's going to do your procedure, and then they'll mention, you know, if it's you. So what they like about you is your bedside manners and just the humanity, the human side of you. So they really like feel like you're warm and caring. I just thought you'd like to know that.
Well, thank. I try to be, just because, you know, you just, you know, doing when you're someone who is burned, you meet them like on the worst day of their lives. Yeah. And they'll always remember you. Mm-hmm. You may forget them, but they're going to remember you.
Yeah.
So I try to make a, try to leave a good impression. And I kind of picked that up from my last job. We did a lot with organ donation and getting our donation rate in the hospital, worked a lot with the transplant collaborative. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, they did surveys of people who were donor families and what they didn't like about the doctor when they said that their loved one had died. Like, they don't want to look like you're rushed. They don't want you coming out there dirty. You know, they want you to sit down and look them in the eye and kind of realize, like, they're always going to remember you. Mm-hmm. If you're rude telling them that their loved one has passed, they will never forget that. Mm-hmm. So that kind of impressed them. You know, it's, you know, we need to do a better job. And then it's just kind of like you're human, you know. Burns is sweaty and dirty. I'm tired, you know.
Burns is so disfiguring. It just, at times, it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's an adult or it's children. It just is something that it's disfiguring. It draws you in. And it's just, to me, on the outside looking in, it's such a tough field. But you say it's satisfying. How so?
I think just getting the, you know, the person back to like their, that becomes their new normal, and seeing them like go back into society, like, is something that you can't really like put a lot of work, you know, it just is so profound. You have such an impact. Like, this is someone who on the worst day of life had a bad accident and something happened, and now they're like back at work. They're, you know, doing their thing, they're, you know, in activities and stuff like that. And you're like, I did that. You know, I had a hand in that.
Yeah. You made a difference.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, our patients, if they're, you know, for a larger burn, we see them for a long time.
Yeah.
Other surgical specialty, you see them for like a week and then you don't see them again.
Yeah.
Some patients, they see us, you know, they're on the unit maybe for 8-9 months. So you know them. They know my footsteps.
And even seeing them for years, because they come back for repeated surgeries.
They come back for surgery. They come back, you know, to follow up. And if they're workers' comp, they have to come back every so often to get, you know, stuff done. But, you know, you really are, we really have ownership of the patients, which is what I like about it. It's not like, who's your doctor? They know who your doctor is. They know, I have that lady. So they know who you are. And sometimes, at least in you know, at Emory or Grady, sometimes the patient doesn't know who their doctor is.
Yeah.
They know who we are, you know, because we're always on the unit, or they know, you know, this is mine, this is who I have, you know, so and so. I think that part of it, which is somewhat old school medicine, I do like about it.
Mm-hmm. It's a relationship you build with these patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know. Are you going back and forth? Do you go to Emory and then?
No, we stay at Grady.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. It's some really, I think the initial, how do you handle the initial, like, share some of your experience with the initial burns? Because to me, that's when it's so new, it's so fresh, it's so disfiguring. But it's not disfiguring because it's just a burn until it starts healing and the scarring comes in. Yeah. Like, how
some of them, you just kind of, you know, the ones that are, I guess looking at it, just how to just kind of scar the person. I mean, if it's not on their face, and you kind of think, okay, we can fix it. It'll look pretty good, you know. But like facial burns, yeah, they're going to be pretty disfigured. They're going to be somewhat disfigured. But I try to make it look as close to, you know, recreate as much as possible as we can, you know, make it look as pleasing cosmetically as you can. Mm-hmm. But I always tell everybody, like, we all have scars. Some people are more visible than others.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And that just takes, I mean, it's like you're doing some plastic surgery too at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Trying to,
so you really got your hand into just a lot of surgical procedures.
Yeah, which makes it fun, you know.
Yeah, you're getting bored.
Yeah, so you're never bored. You know, you're doing somewhat the same operation, but it's a lot of critical care. It's a lot of general surgery, trauma surgery, a lot of psychiatry, Lord have mercy. And we do kids, so you also have pediatrics mixed in the mix, and then dealing with parents of kids, which is different in itself. But and we have patients we see from all over the state, you know, and sometimes from out of state too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
How has the treatment of burns evolved? Because I, you know, like I was saying, I just remember back in the day at St. Barnabas, the morning dunks and these baths. And
yeah.
I just was, the smell, you know, that just.
Yeah, we don't really do that anymore.
They don't even do that?
No, we do have a hydrotherapy room that we use, but it's not like we had, you know, back, I hate to say back in the day, but
it was
25 years ago. That people get in the, like, the tub daily for cleaning. So most of the time it's at the bedside. We still try to do our pediatric kids outside the room to kind of normalize the room as a safe space. So we will do them in the hydro room to kind of get them, so they don't think the bed is the same place I'm going to get hurt at. You know what I mean?
Right.
But as far as the hydro, like, we do daily, you know, that's not like it was before.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the treatments have changed as far as like some of the topical agents, and we didn't really have porcine back in the day. You take the patient up and just scrub it down and put porcine on it to kind of get it to make a temporary bandage, so you have to do the scrubbing every day.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't available. So there's a lot more topicals and skin substitutes that are available now that weren't beforehand, so that makes the treatment a whole lot easier than just the manual labor that it was before.
Mm-hmm. And then the surgical procedures, have that really expanded?
I think that we use different substitutes now that weren't available. And we have, you know, better measures, better equipment, so on and so forth. But it's still, you know, the labor in doing it, that has not changed.
The length of time it takes. And the
some bits quicker just because we have better equipment. You know, you don't do everything by hand anymore, but, you know. But that helps speed it up.
Yeah. So I know you've seen some traumatic things. If you have, and especially with children, like accident and things like that, what advice would you give families and parents as far as just burn prevention? What are just things that you thought?
The big things that we see are generally the kids that we do see that come in with, you know, household accidental burns are ones that are under 5.
Mm-hmm.
The big categories, we call them like pullover skull burns, like they're taking things out of the microwave. A big, we call them R&B, ramen noodle burns, because kids love those little noodles. Wow. And they spill on themselves. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes the parent may be cooking, the child's underfoot, the parent may turn around, the kid's right there, and they spill something on the child, not on purpose, but because the child is around them and not recognizing our surroundings when we're taking things out of the oven or so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the most common ones, are just the kids are pulling things down off the table because they're starting to walk.
Right.
Or mom is holding the baby and she's drinking tea and the baby tries to go for the tea and the tea spills on the baby.
Oh, wow.
Or a smaller child is bringing the mom something in bed and she has a baby in her arms. She's bringing the mom some, you know, her tea or oatmeal or noodles, and they spill on the baby. So those are probably the most common things. Least, like, you know, it's also pretty common, or you just kind of hot water burns from the tap water being too hot. Mm-hmm. They turn on the hot water by mistake getting in the tub.
Right.
Check the water. That's also pretty common that we see.
Yeah. Something that I saw this week, it was a baby that I never thought I didn't think of it until the mom explained how it happened, but it's the fireplace with the glass.
Oh, yes.
Fireplace. Mm-hmm. And the infant or, you know, toddler put his hand on it, but did not have the reflex to just like pull his hands away. He like put his hand on it, it was hot, and then he didn't move. And now he's, you know, have like bilateral burns to his hands,
yeah.
Things like that. I didn't think about those glass fireplace.
Yeah, glass fire, especially with toddlers, because they're just, they're drawn to that and they will touch it.
Yeah.
But also fire pits too, anything with fire, you know, you think the coals are out and the kid is walking on, they put their hands down, the coals are still hot. You see some too.
Yeah. And I think I saw a grandmother that trying to save her, you know, her grandson from a fire pit, she ended up falling. It's not funny, but falling into the fire pit and getting really bad burns. So it's just things that we take for granted. We just got to, you know, from a safety stance, we just, when you have children around, you just got to be even more diligent in trying to protect them.
And as far as like in the Black community, what we see, you know, common in the females is we call them hair care burns. Mm. When people dip braids in the hot water, and the hot water will go on the child's back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I was like, that would be at least two of those a month. So all in no surgery, but yeah, that's pretty common.
Wow. So dipping the hair in the hot water, but then the water drips on the child's back.
Yeah, use the water. They put it like in a little instant pot or hot pot thing, and they, you know, put the braid on the curlers to kind of seal the hair.
Yeah.
When your young child, or, you know, put your head back into this hot water, or, you know, the child may kind of jerk or whatever, and it spills on the child.
Ooh. Yeah, so be alert on that, everybody.
Yes, yeah. So that's a big one. But I was like, I saw one patient, you know, other day, and I was like, they used to like burn the braids to seal them. I said, how many burns are caused by that? Please take a lighter and seal the ends of the synthetic hair. But yeah, dipping the braids. Yeah. We do see kids come in with that at least once a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. What other advice you got for us to just be more safe?
I think, let's see, a common household one would be, you see all kind of like, some things are really random, you know.
Yeah.
One lady I saw last week, she was making candles and the wax exploded.
Oh, wow.
One big thing is like something may catch on fire on the stove and people try to walk with the pan, so the fire flashes back on you.
Yeah.
They're trying to save their house, but like make sure you have a fire extinguisher so you can put the fire out before you're moving the hot pan.
Right. Or tossing it. Cause I think I heard a story too of someone tossing the pan of oil that was on fire or something like that. And the flash burn, her clothes caught on fire. It's just a lot. And even let's not forget electrical burns too.
Electrical burns. And then also the elderly, sometimes they're cooking with these like muumuu things on. And their sleeve will catch fire.
Mm.
And they're not they don't have the dexterity to kind of get it off really quickly. So we've seen deep burns from that.
Mm-hmm.
People will, they'll kind of heat the house with the stove and stand with their back to the stove, not realize their shirt caught fire, you know, when it's cold out.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that happens. We see a lot of diabetic foot burns,
because they've lost their sensation. Now, explain to people about the first, second, and third degree burn, which one's painful, which one's not, initially at least.
Initially, they're all going to be painful.
Yeah.
The first degree, you know, you may just have some peeling, but, you know, you may not feel well if you have a large first degree burn just because you know, you feel lousy just from being dehydrated, but generally you don't really see any blistering. The skin will come back on its own. It will kind of just dry and kind of flake off or just look red. So any first degree burn, when someone says I had 90% burn, we don't count any first degree burns in calculation of someone's like total body surface area burn, if you look at it that way. second degree burn typically will form blisters, and it looks kind of like the skin is melting off, so on and so forth. That one that looks like, oh, it looks bad. You got blisters, bubbles on the skin. And the top layer of the skin will kind of come off. Some of those will heal on their own, and some will require grafting. Mm-hmm. A third degree burn, when the skin kind of looks like leather, it's charred, it's white. I used to say we're burned down to the white meat. You don't really see any blistering. Mm-hmm. Some of those burns can be insensate, but sometimes they will hurt kind of around the burn. But when you touch the area that's burned, the nerves may be completely like burnt out, and then it may not have any feeling at all. But it looks a lot drier. Mm-hmm. Like if you kind of burned up a, we've all burnt food in the stove before, and it comes out like, ooh, that looks bad. Mm-hmm. It's just charred. So it's not, you don't really see a lot of blister formation.
It's just hard and tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And then obviously first degree heals quicker, I'm sure, than I know.
Yeah.
And then second and third degree.
Mm-hmm.
And when do you usually require skin graft?
So typically we say if it is a deep second degree or a third degree. But if the area mostly is second degree and has a touch of third degree, you may say, well, it's going to heal. But a lot of things affect healing of the burn, like the patient's status, you know, before, are they diabetic? Mm-hmm. Is the limb like neuropathic, or they've had a stroke previously, or they have some kind of muscular disease, and those burns tend not to heal because the patient has poor wound healing. If the patient's immunocompromised, diabetic is a very big one in our burn population, unfortunately, or undergoing any kind of like cancer or something like that, then yeah, when they get a burn, it may not heal. Whereas a person who is otherwise normal, it will heal fine without any kind of complications. Right. So we do see a lot of people who are paraplegic get burned because people may run the tub and they can't feel the water, it's hot. Mm-hmm. And as we get older, our skin gets thinner, so we cannot take the hot water as much as you could as a younger person. So mm-hmm. that also happens too. People will turn the water on for grandma and not realize that's too hot for her, and they end up with the burn. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of things. But in the burn community, we don't really use degrees. We say either partial thickness burn or full thickness burn.
Mm-hmm.
So the first, second degree is more just for the lay community. But when we're talking to each other, we'll say it's a full thickness burn or partial thickness burn. And I kind of know what that is. So we will graft some partial thickness burns.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't.
Gotcha. Very good. All right. Anything else you want to share with us about burns and how to stay safe?
The main thing I would say is, like, you know, just make sure you have a fire extinguisher in your house. Okay. And never open a hot radiator cap because it's going to splash in your face.
That's true.
And, you know, the electrical injuries around the house generally are minor. We see a lot of bad electrical injuries from people who are working on, like, on job sites and so on and so forth. So that's a whole different topic. But is the ones that you see around the household really usually deal with cooking, honestly.
Yeah.
Or water that's too hot for someone who's elderly or so on and something like that. But usually it's cooking or there's a house fire. So smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, you know, they don't have the PSAs that we had when I was growing up, like Smokey the Bear and Stop, Drop, and Roll.
Yeah.
And kids aren't taught that anymore. We had a child that was from DeKalb County, and they were playing with leaves. That's a big thing down south, you know, burning the brush. And his pants caught fire. He just kind of ran around. He didn't know to get on the ground and put himself out.
Yeah,
just because they're not taught that anymore.
Well, I never even thought of that. I thought the fire department, what do they do when they go to the schools to teach the kids about fire?
That's really not a big thing anymore. I mean, we used to have a sticker in my window when I was growing up, like you put in your window that says a child's in this room to identify for the firefighters that a child's in that room. They don't really do that anymore. It's kind of gone by the wayside, which is a shame. We had to practice, what was your fire escape plan that we used to have to draw up the house? That's not done as much anymore, just because the school curriculum is so focused on you know, so many other things, a lot of those things like that, household or life skills are kind of left out.
Yeah.
So, you know, we hope to try to bring that back, but it is difficult to kind of penetrate that bubble to, you know, until it happens to one family. How come we didn't know about these things? I'm like, well, the kids just aren't taught that anymore. And there's really no, you know, that those things are just not talked about unless there's an incident, but, or there was a, you know, they have those kind of, what they call it, like fire challenges or ice water challenges. Unless it becomes popular, like it's harmful, people kind of start talking about it, then it just kind of goes away.
Yeah.
But, you know, needing more prevention with new moms who have babies, like how sensitive the baby's skin, and then with the elderly, because they also have sensitive skin, and also with diabetics, because they can't feel anything.
Right.
And that becomes so debilitating for them. You know, a lot of times leading to amputation because you just don't heal and develop infection.
Right. So yeah, it seems so. Our number one, really, our candidates are actually the small children, our most vulnerable people, the elderly, the small people, the children. I'm tired now. Yeah. The small people, the children, and like you said, the diabetics.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big population that we see are, you know, a lot of diabetic foot burns, too many diabetic foot burns. Especially as it gets colder, they want to soak their feet or use these space heaters,
yeah,
which can get very, very hot, but they won't move their foot because it, you know, they can't feel it.
Yeah.
And they get feet burns from there. But those are, you know, besides house fires, which are, you know, the bigger burns are less and less because we have things that are, you know, put into houses, smoke detectors, things are non-flammable, so on and so forth. So you don't really see a lot of big house fires mm-hmm. like we did back in the day because those things weren't as prevalent. But yeah. Still the common are common, cooking with grease, you know, those kind of things. You don't really hear like gas explosions too much because most people have some kind of detector or something like that, which has made things a lot safer. But with injuries that become prevalent, you hope that they make laws to kind of prevent people from being injured from these things again. So,
and then I guess
we do try to. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking like motorcycle accidents, motor vehicle accidents. You know, with any explosion,
yes.
Sometimes you can have
burns
from that.
We see, like, there was a lot was very before they kind of modified the airbags. People had a lot of airbag burns too.
Mm-hmm.
But manufacturers were forced to kind of reconfigure those. Yeah. People are burns just from the airbag. So things that are caused from devices, generally, once the company gets sued, they try to make changes. For example, the warning on your McDonald's coffee came from someone getting a burn from McDonald's.
Yes. Yes. Sued McDonald's and then.
Yeah. So then you see a warning like coffee can hot and can burn you. So
yeah.
Generally how things work, we are trying to pass a bill in Congress through the American Burn Association on we call them fuel containers or gas cans. Companies are not required to put a filter on them.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you're pouring the gas on the fire. The fumes are actual flammable. If the wind picks it up, it's going to, you know, have the flame travel back into the gas can and explodes on you.
Wow.
So the cans for commercial use have them, but the cans for home use do not. And the filter costs a dime. but it's still not a regulation that's passed into law yet. It's passed the House, but I'm trying to get to pass the Senate. And it really is only a voluntary. It's a recommendation. It's not like you cannot sell a can without it. But companies will not put it on just because it's going to cost them a little bit more money. But one injury had the patient in the hospital for months. But those are kind of things that it's hard. It's very hard to get things passed in Congress, especially nowadays. But something as simple as that, getting people to agree to do that, has taken years.
Yeah.
And we've only gotten, you know, past the House and getting people to sign on to it. But you know, they don't, unless it's mandated by the government, they are only going to do it voluntarily. And most of the things, you know, are made in the United States anyway. So they're going to save a buck. So that's just an example of how long it takes things to be legislated as, you know, you should not be selling this.
Yep. Priorities, huh?
Yep. Unless it's you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it only takes one time, right?
It only takes one time. Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. Badly, and then it was important enough to have that in place.
After yeah. And just like they, you know, kids' pajamas didn't used to be fire retardant. Now they are. That took years to come into place.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Even the infants.
The sleepers and stuff like that. It used to be very flammable.
Yeah.
But now they're a flame retardant, and that they have to be manufactured that way. But they get away with that. But, you know, now all the furniture is like plastic and it's very flammable and it makes very toxic things when it burns.
Yeah.
And from IKEA, it's like really, you know, it's like plywood. So it goes up like nothing. So it's just a little thing you think about, like, yeah, that's dangerous, but
yeah.
If you didn't know.
I mean, that's why we're spreading the word to try to get as much from every aspect. I mean, there's so many aspects of health, so I'm just trying to cover as much as I can. What about COVID? Has that really changed your practice, and are you seeing less burns, more burn victims, less, or?
We've stayed about the same. I mean, it didn't impact. I can't go anywhere, but we've been working every day since COVID has been here. We couldn't work from home remotely, unfortunately. I think that we see more patients coming in with the burn. All of a sudden they get a test. Oh yeah, you got COVID too. So that we have seen, but we still take care of them, you know, like we have any other patient. But as far as, you know, more people are probably cooking at home more, but it's, you know, we've pretty much have stayed the same. Fortunately, unfortunately, I could have used a month off or so, but we stayed the same.
I mean, we haven't had off. We've
been, yeah.
You've been required to work more. It's
yeah.
It's I feel like the rest of the world stopped, but
people, we never stopped.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a pandemic for them. For some people, and they really are like bored, you know, being at home all the time. But we don't really know what it's like.
Yeah, I don't really. Yeah, like I've just watching. I've been binging this series. I'm like, okay, I'm just like trying to get home. I mean, one thing has changed. Like I don't, you know, I can't go to the gym as much. So I have like everyone else, they create a little home gym or home workouts, and try to do something else to kind of keep sane and not, you know, not travel. So. Right. You just keep going to work and you don't have the other outlets to kind of decompress. Which makes it not fun, but.
No, it doesn't. I've just been I do ride my bike at the trail, and I ride my Peloton at home, and I'm able to do yoga at home from the whole Peloton thing. Cause otherwise what would we do? We'd be stressed at work and then stress here and never have an outlet, can't enjoy yourselves. No, we got to let it out.
Yeah, so it's just, that's the thing. You just have to adapt it in that aspect. Like,
yes, yes. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I'm so proud
of having me. And always, if you have a burn, like, you know, please come see a burn center. Don't just go to, you know, a doc in the box, people who know, you know, come see people who know what they're doing.
We deal with it every day.
Every day. And it makes sure you have the correct care. So,
yeah.
As far as, you know, at Grady, where our clinic is open 4 days a week, we take walk-ins. So we're very easy to, it's not hard to get an appointment with us. Mm-hmm. You can just walk in and say, have a burn, and we'll see you. If, you know, if the clinic is open. So I think that's unique about our service, which is not true about other services in the hospital. Like we take walk-ins. So it keeps you out of the emergency room and you're able to, you know, be seen, you know, by a physician pretty quickly, which is
pretty good.
Unique in this place as big as Grady. You're not going to be seen by this so-and-so, then so-and-so. I didn't see anybody. Like, no, we're going to see you, you know, and our only attendings staff the clinic. So you don't, we don't have residents in the clinic. So you're seeing actually an attending physician, because someone who's trained in burns who are seeing you personally, which is not true in many clinics in our facility. So I think that makes it very unique.
Yeah, and the clinics function Monday through Friday, or?
They were closed as Thursday.
Okay, so it's Monday. Oh, you're just closed on Thursday. And what's the hours?
We're open from 8:30 to 4.
8:30 to 4, and in just a walk-in, you guys hear that? Anyone with a serious burn?
Grady. Or if not so serious or a small burn, you know, just want to get it checked out. You know, we can see you.
That's true, because I'm sure early intervention can go a whole long, you know, goes a long way with how you heal and scar less and all that. So,
yes, especially if the burn, once the burn becomes more painful, people tend to clean it less well, and then it gets infected, then it gets deeper, and then, you know, you have to get admitted. So, you know, a lot of the burn care nowadays really is outpatient. We see about 100 outpatients a week, so we see a lot more burns that are really small. Mm-hmm. On the clinic side, they don't never even make it to the main part of the hospital.
So those
are things that we also can, you know, see and take care of pretty rapidly.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Continue to do all the amazing job you do. Appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you for having me, and thank you for spreading the word about health. And just how it affects our everyday lives. And
yes,
I appreciate you for considering me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And I'll see you around.
I have a blessed day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Health Flow Podcast. Your support is much appreciated. It is my goal to share health information that you find helpful. Email topics of interest to thehealthflow@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram @thehealthflow, also on Facebook @thehealthflow. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. Until next time, keep your health flowing.